Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. On the local news roundup, infections and hospitalizations rise due primarily to unvaccinated people getting the Delta variant of COVID-19. Doctors and health officials are urging people to get the shots. The countywide mask mandate goes into effect in Mecklenburg County, while in mostly unmasked South Carolina, that state leads the nation in per capita infections. After a year of online schooling, state test scores give most students a failing grade, and following years of delays, Joe Bruno gets to ride the streetcar. That means it's up and running at no charge, because Joe has paid for everybody. And here to bring us up to date on those stories and more is the aforementioned Joe Bruno, reporter for WSOC TV, Channel 9. How was your ride? You're still on the train, aren't you?
I'm doing the broadcast live from the train.
You won't get off. Claire Donnelly is WFAE's healthcare reporter. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Hunter Sines is here from WCNC TV. Good morning, Hunter.
Howdy, Mike.
And Eric Spanberg always brings up the rear in these introductions. No, I don't know why. He's the managing editor for the Charlotte Business Journal. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mike.
The situation with COVID infections continues to get worse. Doctors say local hospitals are, quote, incredibly full. And those same doctors have issued dire warnings ahead of the Labor Day weekend, urging everybody to get the vaccine. This week, Caremont Health chief executive physician Dr. Todd Davis participated in a joint news conference with Atrium and Novant, and he spoke about how this phase of the pandemic has changed because of the Delta variant.
It's different today. Today, we're seeing younger patients. We're seeing patients who predominantly are not vaccinated, which is particularly heartbreaking for us because this seems to be preventable.
92% of patients who are hospitalized from COVID are unvaccinated. And Novant Health's chief clinical officer, Dr. Sid Fletcher, said that's challenging the capacity of all hospitals in the area.
Quite frankly, beds are scarce. We are running short on resources. Novant Health, Atrium Health, and Caremont Health have a total of 933 patients that are admitted in our acute care facilities within the Greater Charlotte market.
Of those 933 hospitalized for COVID, 857 were unvaccinated. Of the 126 on life support, 122 of them are unvaccinated. That's 97%. Claire, you say that this is the week North Carolina could hit its highest numbers of hospitalizations since the pandemic began.
Yep. Yeah. So yesterday, the state reported 3,789 people were in the hospital. And the previous high during the winter surge was 3,990 people in the hospital. So, and echoing what both of those doctors were saying, what I've heard from all health officials, what we've all been hearing from health officials is A, healthcare workers are tired, they're exhausted, and B, perhaps doubly so because this is preventable. We have a vaccine that, as those numbers illustrate, keep people out of the hospital for the most part, and keep people from getting seriously ill, especially from having to be put on a ventilator, which is that number, that 97% of unvaccinated people number you mentioned.
It's interesting to me that people are suspicious of the vaccine, but they're fully willing to take horseworm pills to cure themselves. Joe,
that
unvaccinated
does not work.
It does not work. No, unvaccinated patients dominate hospitalizations at Novant, and you say that, and we just heard that the average age of patients is dropping. Do you know what the average age of patients in the hospital is right now?
Yeah, in Novant, it's 49.
Yeah.
Wow. All the hospitals are clogged up. Is that where we are? What we are to take away from this?
Yeah, but it's also staffing. Staffing is a primary challenge for them. So they may have the physical space for patients, but they don't have the people to actually take care of them.
And remember, the more COVID patients that are in the beds, the harder it is for them to continue doing normal procedures that you would go to the hospital for, right? So if the ER is full and you've had a heart attack or a stroke, but people are crowding in who have COVID, it's going to delay care for other folks. So that's a big concern.
Go ahead, Eric.
I was just going to say, one of the things that struck me looking at some of the numbers this week is, I think it was like late May, we were well under 100 a day. We were like 80 a day was the average. Now we're, I think, around 400 a day in Mecklenburg County. And remember, the peak was 600 to 900 in the winter. So you can clearly see to what your point earlier, Mike, is that we're heading toward that winter peak. We're getting back that high, which is incredible. It's really hard to believe, given that we have a vaccine.
I guess one of the key indicators of how bad things are, Claire, is the fact that the three hospital systems in this area teamed up for a joint press conference this week. How often has that happened?
Right. So we actually saw this happen in the Triangle a couple of weeks back. Hospital systems up there did this. It's not that common. I feel like we heard this maybe at the very, very beginning of the pandemic, but it's not often that we hear that from folks. And I think that, to your point, is an indication of how bad it is and of really wanting to say, we need your help. This is really bad.
Yeah, Hunter.
I think there's a real sense of urgency too, of course, with the upcoming holiday weekend.
Yes.
If we remember from last year, every time there was a summer holiday, it seemed like a week or 2 weeks after there was something going on as far as a rise in cases here in our area.
In other parts of the country, hospitals have canceled elective or non-immediate surgeries. They've delayed being able to pick up patients who are in emergency situations because the ambulances are all out picking up COVID patients. And some non-COVID people suffering from non-COVID ailments have been told to find alternative care someplace else because we can't handle you. And we're also beginning to hear stories of people who had loved ones die because they were released prematurely from hospitals who needed the beds for COVID. That hasn't happened here yet, Claire, but how far away are we from that? What have hospitals said about that in this region?
So they haven't issued blanket statements canceling, you know, elective surgeries across the board, but they are doing kind of a weekly assessment of how many beds do we have? How many surgeries do we have scheduled? Are there surgeries where someone can come in, have the procedure and leave? In that case, that's fine. If you're going to have a procedure that you might have to hang out in the hospital for 4 days, they may say, let's reschedule that if it's not urgently necessary. So, it's happening. It's just not as blanket as it was before.
August was the deadliest month for COVID in North Carolina since last February. 788 people died in North Carolina last month. 1,267 died last February. Given the exponential increases, and you brought this up a second ago, Hunter, the exponential increases that we always see about 2 weeks following holidays, we're coming up to Labor Day. It's Monday. Are hospital officials predicting anything about what they think they might have to prepare for in 2 weeks? Hunter?
I think they know that there is a good chance that if especially unvaccinated people decide to get out and hang out in large crowds, whether indoor, outdoor, if you're near somebody for that more than 15 minutes, that this Delta variant that we know is highly contagious is easily going to spread and you could be hospitalized. There's a good bet that you will visit the hospital if you are unvaccinated. That's what the numbers show. So I think that this is one of the reasons they're trying to get ahead of it as they did in the past. But the problem is, will the community actually listen?
By the way, you've got 100,000 people coming in for college football games. You had 35,000 last night and you're going to have 75,000 Saturday night for Clemson, Georgia. That's great in many ways for the hospitality industry and the economy. But when we're talking about this virus, it doesn't take time off.
I think I'm right in saying that in February, there were no vaccines yet available. And if they were available, you really had to fight to get in line to get them because it was really hard to get those vaccines, as Joe Bruno will tell you, at least in the beginning. Now we have three, and they're easy to get, and they are free. Has there been any increase in the number of people, and there are also incentives, have there been any increases in the number of people trying to get the shots? How many in the state or in Mecklenburg have been fully vaccinated? I guess that might be a question for you, Claire.
Yeah, so there has been an increase in the past month or so. I'm looking at my numbers right now. So in Mecklenburg County, 57% of the total population has gotten at least one dose, but that's the total population. And then 68% of people who are eligible, so 12 and older, have gotten at least one dose. So that's definitely up. There, we were hanging out for a good while there at around half, but that's definitely been an uptick. I remember a couple of roundups ago, Mike, you asked me about the carrot or the stick. And I think in some ways the stick is working. People are freaked out about Delta, and that's moving them. That's moving the needle. Pardon the pun.
Yeah, the stick is not something that people have mandated. It's the fact that Delta is rearing its ugly head, and people are realizing this is serious stuff.
And some mandates, but yeah.
Have officials said anything about how they would like people to act this Labor Day weekend? I read an article in the paper this morning about they expect airline travel to be way up and passenger capacity at the airport here way up this weekend. What are they telling people to do or not do?
The CDC is telling unvaccinated residents to stay at home, but I think we all know that is not going to happen. I think that hospital systems and health leaders in general are saying just, you know, be aware that, you know, of the current situation with COVID. But yeah, that warning has been issued for unvaccinated people.
I mean, at some point, doesn't it feel like the begging, you know, there's the begging, the imploring. How many times can you say it? I know you can't give up, but how many times can you say it?
I was just going to say, what can you say that hasn't already been said to those who don't want to get this vaccine? Health officials must feel like Charlie Brown banging his head against the wall every time that Lucy pulls the football out. I mean, it's just, what can you say? I mean, they're just not going to do it. So some people were waiting for the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine or the Johnson & Johnson vaccine to get approval from the FDA. Several weeks ago, the Pfizer vaccine did get that approval. As a result, are we seeing people who were on the fence now moving to get the shot?
Yes. I think a small number. So I covered a vaccine clinic down in Mint Hill, and a lady named Michelle Arp was just driving by, saw the vaccine bus, and was like, all right, I'm doing it. I see the bus, it's here, it's in this parking lot, I'm going through with it. She said she did her research, FDA approved, and she was inspired by some of her friends who have been put on ventilators recently.
And she also said something that I think may resonate with other folks.
I'm hard-headed, I'm stubborn, but it's time. I want to be around to take care of my kids.
I want to be around to take care of my kids. How about that? And she says that she knows people who have been put on a ventilator because of COVID. Is that what's ultimately going to do the trick here? People coming around to thinking, I got to take care of my family. I don't want to leave my loved ones in the lurch. I've seen what this has done to friends and family members. I don't want that to happen to me. Is that what's going to pull the trigger on this?
So Dr. David Priest with Novant did mention that he feels like the more and more people get it and don't have these sort of serious, scary, untrue side effects that have been circulating on social media, the more kind of the snowball effect will happen. It just may take a little longer than we thought initially.
So this is leading to problems in hospitals around the country and now here in terms of personnel problems, etc. We had equipment problems and shortages of all kinds of PPE earlier in the pandemic. Now it's filtering down to individuals. We'll talk about that. And vaccine rates within city employees when we come back. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's the local news roundup on Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Eric Spanberg, managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal, Joe Bruno from WSOC-TV, Channel 9, Hunter Sines from WCNC-TV, Channel 36, and Claire Donnelly from Well, from right here, WFAE News. She's our healthcare reporter. And Claire, you report that the state faces a shortage of respiratory therapists as these COVID cases climb. If February was a worse month than August, which is, the second worst month, or the third, did we experience that same shortage back then?
Yeah, so this is a shortage that I think has sort of been growing and building for a while. This woman I talked to at the State Association for Respiratory Care, which represents respiratory therapists in North Carolina, said that it's actually, you know, kind of been brewing for 5 years or so. It's just that with the pandemic, so many COVID-19 patients need respiratory care, right? That number that you read earlier about the number of patients on ventilators, respiratory therapists are the people who monitor the ventilators and sort of know how to use them. So it's an issue of folks, of respiratory care programs not enrolling enough students, and then not enough students graduating who know how to, you know, do respiratory care. And then also people are retiring and leaving the field for other jobs. So.
And not only do they monitor the machines and know what the little readouts mean and what to do in response to whatever the patient is experiencing according to the machine, they help wean you off the machine, because that right. takes up, it's a process. You just don't turn the machine off and you're fine. And you said that obviously there are not enough people entering that part of the medical profession. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics estimates the nation will need 20% more respiratory therapists by 2029. I'm wondering why. These numbers were before the pandemic, so I'm wondering why they felt the need was going to be rising as we go forward. And it takes a while to get that training. So if you go into it and the pandemic ends, will you be as needed as you are right now?
I think yes. I can't speak to where the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics sort of made how they made those projections. But I did also want to say that, you know, there's this huge issue happening right now with traveling companies. So recruiting respiratory therapists to go travel and sort of be mobile floaters, you know, maybe go to areas hard hit by the coronavirus and help out. And they can pay a lot of money that hospitals can't necessarily match. So that's also part of the problem, is we may lose out on some local respiratory therapists because they're traveling, they're joining these traveling companies.
You also report this week that EMT is understaffed, even as hospitals fill up with patients. You say that paramedics and EMTs are working mandatory overtime shifts as a result. Again, did this happen in February?
I think this is another thing that it's sort of been brewing, but it sort of came into stark relief with the pandemic. You know, the head of Medic, Charlotte's Mecklenburg's EMS agency, Jonathan Studnick, told me that they're short about 45 EMTs and paramedics, hence the mandatory overtime and managers sort of jumping on to help cover those. And he also said that during a pandemic, during busy times for healthcare, it's often hard to get people to jump into the healthcare field. So some people may be motivated by the pandemic, but other people may be like, no thanks, I don't want to be an EMT or a paramedic right now. COVID-19 is dangerous.
Yeah, you're a frontline worker. Eric, go ahead. No.
I was just going to say, I think it was Claire was talking about Dr. David Priest earlier in the show. And he had the quote this week where he just said, we're all tired. And I think, you know, in some ways, it's even worse that you go through more than a year of this. Then it looks like if it's not over, it's greatly reduced. And then all of a sudden you ramp right back up. I mean, the stress of that, I think you see that toll anecdotally and in the numbers in terms of healthcare workers right now.
And one of the respiratory therapists I interviewed said, you know, we're all just hoping we can do this again. We did this when we didn't have a vaccine. Now we have a vaccine and we're still doing this.
And I'm seeing more and more of these clips with healthcare workers who are exhausted, and they will tell the reporter how tired they are and how frustrating it is that they're seeing patients who are coming into the hospital that didn't have to be here because they could have gotten the vaccine. And the subtext of all that is, why am I doing this? because it's got to play. They have to do it because it's their job, but it just has to be incredibly frustrating. Despite all the things that we have talked about so far this week, Hunter, you say the biggest story of the week is the vaccination rates of city employees. The city has given a breakdown by department, and you noticed that so-called frontline employees have the lowest vaccination rates. What jobs are they in? And has anyone explained why?
I'm not the only one that saw these numbers. I know my good friend Joe Bruno and Eric also did as well. Joe, I know, actually did some further reporting on this, but I just, you know, I'm sure there are different angles to see everything and right, a bunch of different lenses. But when you have Charlotte Fire Department, 51% of them not vaccinated, you have solid waste, nearly 40% of them are not vaccinated, CMPD officers, 37%. And these are the same people who were asking for hazard slash premium pay, asking for the city to implement more safety protocols. A large percentage of them will not take the one thing that medical professionals say will safeguard you. That was just a head scratcher for me. And yet they could get paid $250, maybe $500 in an incentive to get a shot that's free.
Right. Joe.
So the city sent out this mandatory vaccination survey to find out how many employees are vaccinated, and they are assuming everyone who did not respond to the survey, which was a small number, is unvaccinated. And the results show that Charlotte Fire has the lowest vaccination rate at only 48% being vaccinated, followed by CMPD at 59 and CATS at 60. So I talked to the departments, and Charlotte Fire says their low rate reflects the debate in the community whether or not to get a vaccine. All three departments said it are fully encouraging employees to get the vaccine, both in written and verbal communication, and they're confident that their numbers will improve as and that this incentive program will be effective. But multiple elected leaders in the city are disappointed with these numbers, yeah, especially because, you know, this is half of the workforce. CATS, CMPD, and Charlotte Fire, and they all interact with the public every single day, and they have the lowest vaccination rates.
There's something else that is emerging from these numbers, yes, that were released this week. The Charlotte City Manager's Office has the highest vaccination rate, 100%, with Charlotte Fire being at the bottom, CMPD being a little above the bottom. It looks like, when you look at these numbers about who's getting the vaccine and who is not, that it is the white-collar city workers who are getting the shot, while the blue-collar frontline workers, who are most at risk, are not.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Also, shout out to the internal audit department for being 100%. But when you combine the city manager's office and internal audit, that's 19 employees. So great job to those 19 people. But I know elected leaders are taking a look at this, these numbers, and they're starting to think about what's next if these incentives don't work. Julie Eisel, I spoke to yesterday, and her proposal is possibly raising the healthcare costs, a higher premium for unvaccinated employees.
Like Delta did.
Yeah. You know, the city hasn't put in place a testing program yet for unvaccinated employees like the county has. That could also be something down the line. And of course, there's always the possibility that the shots will be mandatory at some point. Yeah. But you got to remember, I mean, if you have thousands of frontline workers not getting the shot, there's probably a good amount of those workers that will not get the shot for any reason and any risk losing them.
I just want to point out that the city employee vaccination rate, the overall vaccination rate, is lower than the statewide number percentage of people who have gotten it one dose, and it's lower than the Mecklenburg County overall rate, right? So that was that 68% of people 12 and older in Mech, and then 64% in North Carolina. So that's really interesting.
The number for city government is 62%. So you're right, they are lower. Nearly 8,000 city government workers have been at least partially vaccinated. The response rate on that survey, I think, was 95%. So 5% of the people did not. So you can assume that those people maybe did not get the shot. But incentives are in play here. And we just talked about this a second ago. If you get the shot, there's money involved, not just from the state now, but from the city. Fully vaccinated employees vaccinated by September 30th will receive $250. And if 75% of city employees get the shot, they'll get another $250. Any idea whether this is working?
It's hard to imagine. It can't. I mean, you're talking about free money here, $250 just for being vaccinated, possibly $500. And you're hearing an elected leader say, hey, we may raise your healthcare premium. So if you don't take the free $250, are you going to be paying an extra $200 a month?
And Hunter,
I don't know. You got to think about that.
You spoke to City Councilman Tariq Makary and also to City Councilman Larkin Eggleston about incentives. What did they have to say about this?
Yeah, I did for Flashpoint this weekend, and they basically talk about, Claire talking about the carrot and the stick, they're going with that approach. I mean, they don't want to force anything upon their city employees just yet, but to Joe's point, can they do it in more roundabout ways, raising healthcare costs? Can they sit here and try to implement the, well, if you're not getting tested, or if you're not getting vaccinated, you're going to do a weekly test? But Larkin basically said, he's not opposed, and he's not saying that they won't get to a vaccine mandate. He says that if they have to, they will go that route, but they're trying to take baby steps to get there right now. Why, when we have such a problem? I think you can be skeptical and ask that question. I don't really know.
Am I right that only Mecklenburg County Public Health has mandated vaccines?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
So hospital systems have mandated vaccines. Our hospitals, and I was talking to somebody last night who has a friend who's a nurse who won't get the vaccine because she doesn't trust it, and she's in the healthcare system, and she's facing a daunting choice because hospital systems have said you have until X date to get the vaccine or we will terminate you. But at Novant, they've pushed back their deadline for that to September the 15th. Why?
Sorry, I was muted. Yes, so they say that, like you were talking about earlier in the show, some people who were hesitant because of the absence of full FDA approval, since that came in the middle of this time period, Novant is now giving everybody until September 15th to get at least one dose. Previously, September 15th was the deadline for both doses, so to be fully vaccinated. It's not clear how long after September 15th they'll now have to get fully vaccinated. But
And in places where they have a vaccine mandate, an employment vaccine mandate, there are people trying to get around that through the use of legitimate and sometimes illegitimate religious exemptions. Hunter, what are you finding out about how effective they are?
Yeah, I spoke with a plaintiff employment attorney yesterday about this, and pretty much they are slim to none. It's very narrow to win a case on a religious exemption form. And the reason is because they were never made, a religious exemption was never made for something like the vaccine. They cannot circumvent the health and safety laws and procedures that companies or employers have to follow to keep their workforce safe and healthy. And so if you're sitting here saying, I'm going to have somebody die on the job from a COVID cluster versus, you know, accommodating somebody's religious belief that may or may not actually be true, you know which one they're going to go with. So the attorney said, you're going to get fired and there's little that you can do about it. Wow. And some of them won't even take up the cases.
And you know, Mike, you were talking about carrot and stick. I mean, I think to Hunter's point right there, and the slow pace that we have seen with these incentives, with the 100, with the 250, whatever it is, everything seems to be pointing in the direction of a lot more stick than carrot to really get the needle to move, if I can steal from Claire as well. I'm stealing from everybody in this
I think we
segment.
Need to rename this the Carrot or Stick Show.
That's right.
Okay. We'll get a sounder. Mask mandates went into effect this week in Mecklenburg County. You have to wear a mask inside a building in Charlotte and unincorporated areas of the county. And they've given the towns of Cornelius, Huntersville, and Pineville until August 28th to comply with that. Why?
It's kind of technical. The public health rule that they voted on has to go into effect 10 days after the vote. So that was the earliest it could go into effect. Actually, it was August 31st because the county didn't do it correctly and provide a legal notice. So they got a couple extra days mask free.
And is this being enforced? And how?
Is the million-dollar question. Yeah. I mean,
well, CMPD has told me they have not issued any fines to businesses, people over the mask mandate.
The policy. Universal word used is educate, which means tell people to put their mask on. Mm-hmm.
So I did want to point out, you know, as with every mandate or that we've had thus far in the pandemic, it's by and large falling on local business owners to make that decision of whether to enforce or not. And just anecdotally, I mean, I've been in Harris Teeter and seen folks not wearing masks and nobody is saying anything to them because it's just, I mean, yeah.
Because a business owner they're already struggling. They don't want to run off more customers. I mean, that's just a very difficult challenge for a business owner to be the enforcer.
Grocery stores are not suffering, nor will they ever.
Grocery stores are not suffering, but there are plenty of other businesses where, you know, you don't want to run off customers. Not that the grocery stores do, but
have you checked the price of groceries? They could run off 50% of them and still make a profit. COVID shots are now booster shots are now becoming available for those who had their initial doses 8 months ago or those with medical conditions that put them at risk. Are people getting those shots, Joe?
I assume so, but the county does not know how many people have gotten a third dose yet. So they are not tracking that data. I know Alma Adams got a booster shot, so there's one for you.
So it isn't Texas or Mississippi or Alabama or even Florida. It is South Carolina that holds the dubious distinction of leading the nation in the number of COVID cases per capita. That state's governor also lifted the state of emergency associated with the pandemic, urging residents to get vaccinated, but by opposing masks in school. He's kind of muting all of that. Of course, the per capita figure of 76 cases per 100,000 people is a percentage, and percentages can be deceiving. What are Palmetto State hospitals saying about the impact of the pandemic? Do you know, Claire?
I mean, it's the same, I think, as in North Carolina and across the country. The fewer people get vaccinated, the more the hospitals feel the impact of this surge. So they're in exactly the same position, if not a worse position, with being full.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, it's off to school we go. Or check up on how they're doing, and we'll get there by riding the streetcar. Joe will tell us how. We're coming right back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks and the local news roundup on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Claire Donnelly is here from WFAE News, and she's our healthcare reporter.
I'm like Cher.
You only need your
just
first
one name.
That's it. Joe Bruno is the trolley rider for WSOC-TV. Hunter Sines is a reporter for WCNC-TV, and Eric Spanberg is the managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. We know of at least one school in Fort Mill Middle School has switched to online-only classes because of COVID outbreaks. Governor Henry McMaster in South Carolina has been adamant about not requiring masks in that state's schools. In June, the General Assembly there passed a budget provision banning school districts from requiring students and teachers to wear masks against the recommendation of that state's health department. A South Carolina pediatrician and former president of the state chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics calls all this the perfect storm for COVID to spread. And they've canceled a high school football game in South Carolina tonight because of COVID. Are most schools in South Carolina still following a mask optional policy?
Yes.
Then we'll leave it at that. CMS
and
has been
seen.
And seen, that's right. CMS has been back to school for a few weeks now. Hunter, you reported this week that CMS has not been following all of the COVID recommendations set out by Mecklenburg County Health Director Gibby Harris. Where are they falling down on the job?
Yeah, so Gibby Harris would have liked to have seen that all unvaccinated staff members for CMS be tested for COVID once a week. That's not up and running yet. She also wanted to see rapid COVID testing for anybody who fell with symptoms on a campus for on-campus testing, and that is not up yet. Now, it's not entirely CMS's fault. They didn't know who the vendor for all of these tests was until the middle of August from the state. So I reached out to the state. Hey, state, if you hear this, I'm still waiting for your response. I have not heard back from them, but the fact is that, you know, we're now going into week 2-3 of school. We have 175 cases, COVID cases, already in the first 3 days. The new data will come out tonight at 6. So time is of the essence here. And these very important steps that Gibby Harris would like to see still are not put in place.
And you spoke with Mecklenburg County Commissioner Lee Altman about this, and she said that these oversights concerned her.
I think I, along with all CMS parents, feel trepidation. I just hope that we will soon be able to have all the protections in place. I too, as a parent and commissioner, would like to know when they will have the vaccine verification program in place and the rapid testing on site in place.
She's also a CMS mom. That's part of her concern, obviously. She referred to rapid testing and Gibby Harris's recommendations, which state, quote, this year, K through 12 schools are expected to have a testing protocol in place to recognize cases and allow for rapid removal of infected individuals. That's not happening?
It's being worked on is what I'm told by CMS. But there, you know, if you have symptoms, there's no testing on all campuses like Gibby Harris wants. There's no testing of unvaccinated workers once a week. So that is not being followed just yet.
Eric.
And Mike, just to sort of tie this back to, you were just talking about South Carolina. We've already got some schools in South Carolina that have had to go back to virtual or remote learning. And, you know, that is the elephant in the room here. Nobody wants that. Everybody has said, and we're going to talk about the test scores. We all know emotionally, educationally, all these things go downhill when you're not in the classroom. And yet what Hunter is reporting on points to the risk of having to do just that.
Gibby Harris's recommendations also included weekly testing of staff who have not submitted proof of vaccination and the availability of on-site rapid diagnostic testing for symptomatic students and staff. That too is not happening?
Correct. Not yet.
What is the vaccination rate for teachers and staff? Does anybody know?
I asked CMS that at their first day of school news conference, and they are still, it sounds like they are still surveying that information, but they have not released that information as far as a figure is concerned. As far as a timeline though, Mike, on when, because a lot of parents, including Commissioner Altman, is wondering when will this stuff be in place? And I'm told that they're working on it. They are meeting with this vendor who will provide these tests on campus. But when it does happen, it will be a phased in approach with extracurriculars first, then starting with high school down towards the elementary level, which kind of I scratch my head at, because I would have thought, and this is just me thinking about this, that elementary would go first since they are unvaccinated technically and don't have access to it yet.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say one thing, Mike. You know, usually when we would talk about something like this, one of the things that you would factor in is, look, so many limited resources, schools are under so much pressure. But remember, they are flush with federal recovery cash. I mean, that came in May. And so that begs another question. They should have the resources to go out and get extra people to help them carry out these initiatives before school even started.
And Joe, the governor recently signed Senate Bill 654. This deals with a lot of aspects of public schools and their intersection with COVID. What does it do?
The two major things: one, it's more flexibility for classrooms and grades, schools to go to remote learning if there is an outbreak or a lot of students who need to quarantine. The other thing is it will require school boards to have a vote every single month whether or not to have a mask mandate in place. So all those fun school board meetings and public comment sessions will occur much more often.
Oh, joy. A lot of experts in education predicted a lost generation of school children as the result of last year's year of online learning. It may not end up being a lost generation, but there's certainly been, I think, maybe a lost year. and most definitely backsliding if the statewide test scores are any indication. Most CMS students failed those exams and slightly trail other districts in reading, math, and science. And CMS Superintendent Ernest Winston shared the results this week and declared his disappointment.
These results were not unexpected, but I will also tell you they are not acceptable. We might be releasing the test results today, but we are already taking action. It will take a true community all-in approach to help us recover and accelerate learning.
How bad were they?
Pretty bad. You know, last time that they had these end of year tests, statewide tests, was in 2019. And then there was like 59% of students passed. This time, only 45% of students passed. And when you look at nearly every subject for every age group in CMS, the numbers for college and career readiness exams have dropped at least 15 points or percentage points, however you want to look at it. And there are disparities when you get into something like science per se, where there is disparities among racial groups within CMS. So of course there were problems before the pandemic, and this of course just exacerbated it. And now it's trying to catch these kids up.
And Ernest Winston called this the most significant disruption of public education in our lifetimes. Does CMS have the resources to take this all-in approach that Winston says will be necessary to recover and accelerate learning?
They're acting like it. They're wanting to spend $50 million to try to partner with some local organizations that will help these kids get back to where they need to be, you know, whether that's tutorials or extra instruction time. They're also implementing small things like, well, you would think it could be small things, but it may be a big thing, 45 minutes of extra reading time in class every day from here on out. But the biggest thing that he already pointed to is we're back in person. And that's a big thing compared to an all virtual setting. But there are many things the district's trying to do, and I don't think anybody envies the catch up that they're going to have to play, but it's going to take time. That's a big thing too.
Well, some time for something lighthearted. It finally happened this week. The streetcar finally began running with passengers. And Joe, you've been camping out along the route for months. I know that you wrote it repeatedly this week.
Clang, so, clang, clang, clang.
Were you the first passenger? Were you among the first passengers?
There weren't too many passengers, so I think it's safe to say I was among the first to ride it.
Was there a driver?
Like 3 o'clock. Yeah, you know, it was. There was little fanfare for the streetcar opening. Yeah. The rollout was very slow. We didn't know the thing was opening until a couple days prior to it actually getting on the tracks there. So that probably contributed to it. But not too many people rode it on the first day. It's different than when the light rail opened and everyone was doing live broadcasts and people were packed into the train.
I joked a couple of weeks ago that they built the Transcontinental Railroad in less time than it took to build this. Well, I checked, and I was right. It took 6 years to build the Transcontinental Railroad, and I think they started this phase of the streetcar 6 years ago, and they still aren't finished. So I think I was right about that. So what was the writing? Go ahead.
I want to give a little shout out to the passengers of the streetcar. Yesterday for the App State game, it was pretty full, and I'm pretty hopeful that the Georgia-Clemson game will pack the streetcar once again. So maybe it's a slow rollout.
The ride itself
was very smooth. Okay. I think I spent 3 or 4 hours on the thing. Why does my station let me do this stuff?
There's some great tweets saying, is Joe still on the streetcar?
Wow. The whole experience, just being on the streetcar, it was like a fantasy football punishment for people who finish last. I was on the streetcar for hours. But the ride itself was smooth. There was a stop at the Johnson & Wales area that lasted for 5 or 10 minutes, and they didn't explain why. But if you take the thing from Plaza Midwood to Biddleville, it will take you about 37 minutes if there's no traffic and all goes
to plan. So Joe watched the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy while he was riding the streetcar.
Yeah. The greatest part is that for as long as Joe spent on that streetcar the first day of it opening, when you went to his live shot, he was sadly kicked off because it had stopped.
Couldn't time it right. I had to do the live shot outside of the streetcar because when my producer slated me to go live, it just so happened we had to get out of the streetcar so it could change directions.
So you and I have something in common because I once had to ride Thunder Road at Carowinds for hours for a piece for WBTV. And the reason I had to keep doing it is because that was back in the days when you were using tape in the cameras, and the centrifugal force of going up and down was pulling the tape off the heads, and we were getting glitches. You spoke with CAT CEO John Lewis at the opening, and he was looking ahead to Phase 3's plan to extend the line north along Beatty's Ford Road and out to the old Eastland Mall site on Central Avenue. But because the streetcar operates on city streets and will be in traffic with cars and buses, that presents challenges.
As we get into Phase 3, this is going to be about a 10-mile corridor, and we will need to be competitive with other modes of transportation.
And you also spoke with the Johnson C. Smith University employee, who was one of the riders on many of your several trips.
I'm excited and glad it's up and running. I think it's going to be a great experience for our students to be able to go straight uptown and come back.
So is it a success, and when will the extension open? Will we be alive?
It's too early to say if it will be a success. I think it will be great for Johnson C. Smith students, CPCC students, and Johnson & Wales students. I know if I was in college and I had access to this free streetcar that will take me into the nightlife and all the restaurants and all the fun for free, I think I would be ecstatic. But I think it is too soon to say when, if it is a success, and it is definitely way too soon to predict when this Phase 3 of the streetcar will open.
Speaking of predictions, we had John Geddes, the mayor of Rock Hill, on the program this week, and we were talking about the headquarters for the Panthers and the construction down there to get it ready. And in the course of our conversation, he was talking about all the great things it was going to do for Rock Hill, but then I asked him the key question, and I think you'll be intrigued by his response. Very quick answer, because I'm really short on time. Are you ready to make a bid for the new stadium if Charlotte doesn't kick in money? It's already underway. I can see it on your face. All right. Eric, did I jump to the right conclusion?
I think you are absolutely right. Leverage is always the name of the game when we talk about stadiums. So, yes, that's the right question.
Meanwhile, the venerable Penguin Drive-In out there in Plaza Midwood has been replaced by a new restaurant, and that restaurant is donating the old Penguin sign to the Charlotte History Museum. Jimmy King, the former owner, told Fox 46 how he created that iconic logo.
I had an old ice chest that had that bird on it, and I put the little red eye in because it's a bar. And we went from there.
Yes, behind every great work of art, there is a story like that. So finally, so that we can stop talking about COVID, let's go back to where we started this program and to a statement made several weeks ago by Governor Cooper that is still obviously applicable today.
Get a vaccine today. Don't wait until you or a family member is sick and going on a ventilator. Don't wait until we run out of hospital beds. Don't wait until skyrocketing numbers threaten to shut businesses or cancel sports. Don't wait until you infect somebody you love. Get a vaccine today.
Is anybody listening? Is the thing on? Just check it. Claire Donnelly from WFAE News, Joe Bruno from WSOC-TV was able to. We pulled him off the streetcar for just a second. He'll be getting out back on in a second. Hunter Sines from Channel 36 WCNC-TV and Eric Spanberg from the Business Journal. Thanks. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.